Turning our attention now to the food of the gods. What is the food of the gods, you might ask? Well, I tell you what, chocolate. And I would consider it to be a food of the gods. And with Valentine's coming up very shortly, Mr. Valentine himself, Jim Nienhuis, a UW-Madison professor of horticulture, gardening haiku poet. He's also worked in the chocolate field, considerable work in the chocolate field with M&M Mars Company in Brazil. So we're really pleased to have him back. And there's a special exhibit that relates to chocolate that you may have a chance to visit as well. And he's had a major role in that, too. So we'll talk with him about that and answer your questions about chocolate as we move along today. And you can join in, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at talk@wpr.org. Jim Nienhuis, welcome.
Hey, the Valentine. What did you call me? The Valentine horticultural guy? That's me.
That's you. Well, chocolate, these days, it's thought of as a mood lifter, an antioxidant, even an aphrodisiac. All that an old wives' tale or what?
No. You know, listen, Larry, we are human beings, and any excuse that we can make up, it's not like, you know, it's not like, gee, I really want to have, you know, carbohydrates. We say, no, I want a mood lifter. You know, Larry, here, I'll tell you why this is true. Years ago, there used to be a product for weight reduction called Metrical. This is way before your era.
Yeah.
And I remember the doctor interviewing my mother, and he said, Mrs. Nienhuis, why don't you drink your Metrical? She said, I love my Metrical, especially with a scoop of ice cream. That's why we eat chocolate. All those things are excuses, Larry.
What's the give us a little of the history and the botany of chocolate. Let's do that.
Well, it's a plant from northern South America, the Amazon basin. The thing that is absolutely fascinating to me as a horticulturalist is that the area of diversity for chocolate is in the Orinoco River Valley, right in Brazil. And yet, apparently, chocolate, as we know it today, was not domesticated there.
Oh, it wasn't?
What it was apparently used for is when you break open a chocolate pod, the seeds themselves are surrounded by this mucilaginous goop. I forget the technical name for that. And it is extremely high in sugars. And that was fermented into a kind of a beer. But apparently, the seeds were discarded. It's a fascination to me that in an area far from, right, like 1,000 kilometers north of there, where we think of chocolate being actually domesticated for the seeds, for the fermented and then roasted seeds, is in Mexico. It is Montezuma. It is the Mayans and the Aztecs that make chocolate. It is not the indigenous people in the Orinoco River Valley.
That's amazing.
Isn't that amazing?
Talk a little bit about how does chocolate come from those seeds? I mean,
Well, you know, they're just big seeds. You know, they just got cotyledons inside there. And the fascinating thing is that because the seeds are surrounded by this very, very high sugar mucilaginous gulp, goop, they will ferment at very, very high temperatures. And it is the process of fermentation. Right, so the seeds are fermented, the embryos are killed, and that high temperature process alone will produce the changes in the flavor, and it'll develop the color and flavor. Then the second part of the process is that the seeds are roasted, and of course, every chocolate company, they all think that they have the super secret, right? 250 degrees, you know, for 4 hours or whatever. Everybody thinks they probably all do the same thing. But it is the roasting that then develops the additional flavors and complexity of the chocolate itself.
Where does the best chocolate come from?
Wow, that is such a good question. You know, it's very complex, actually, Larry, because there are varieties, but it's more like ginseng. It's sort of semi-domesticated, so there aren't real genotypes that are superior. In other words, it's not okay. Like M&M Mars grows, you know, variety number A that produces super chocolate. It's all basically mixed. And how they produce their good chocolate is through their processes rather than by the specific genotypes. The chocolate that comes in is basically a bulk commodity.
Joyce in Prairie du Chien has a question for you. Hi, Joyce.
Hi.
Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, he's connected with the Mars company. I was wondering, why can't we find the old-fashioned Mars bars we used to get years ago?
That's such a good question. Listen, I'm going to tell you, I think I can tell this story without getting us into too much trouble. But one of the questions is, why in the heck does somebody at the University of Wisconsin-Madison work in chocolate? Because, you know, it's not like a big crop here.
Yeah.
You know? We don't get a lot. There's not a lot of farmer demand for it. But my lab is really good at genetics, and we're good at statistics. And this particular company, M&M Mars, wanted somebody who was really good at genetics and statistics to work out a little issue for them. Here's the hilarious story. I'll tell you this one. In an obtuse way, I will answer your question. I went to work. This fellow visited the university. He wanted me to work with him, and I said, fine. They sent me a ticket out of the blue, and I was to report to Bahia, Brazil, and I was to present my research proposal to them. And it turned out that at this meeting was the owner of Mars, Forrest Mars, you know, Mr. 6 Billion, right? he's like 10 to the ninth more than I am, right? Now, here's the funny part of it. We're at the interview, and I thought, of course, you know, being a scientist, that he was going to interview me and say, well, you know, how's your research project? What do you want to do for us? And so he sits across the table from me, and he says, young man, he says, why do you want to work for Mars? and I was just dumbfounded, right? I mean, we're not used to answering these kinds of questions. Yeah. You know, and you don't want to tell him the truth because I want your money. So I said, well, Mr. Mars, I said, because it runs in the family. And that caught him by surprise. And he said, well, young man, he said, what do you mean by that? And I said, well, listen, what it is that my mother lived in Chicago, and you guys had a factory on Austin Avenue. And I said, when my mother graduated from high school, she went to work at that factory. And the reason I said I know that is because, you know why I know that? It's because every time... remember that Lucille Ball,
I Love Lucy show.
Yeah, that I Love Lucy show where she's at the factory, and remember the she's got the eggs and she can't get them into the boxes, and she's working on the assembly line. Every time they would play that I Love Lucy show, my mother would turn to me and she'd say, "That's exactly what it was like at Mars." I'm sorry. Now, why don't they have the Mars bar? They make them at the Austin Avenue factory there in Chicago. They still make them. They're great.
Oh, they still make them?
Sure.
They used to be kind of a brown wrapper, as I remember. It's been a long time ago.
Did you ever see that Lucille Ball show where they where they play that? Yeah. Can you imagine my mother doing that?
So, but it's still, it's the, what's the name? It's the Mars Company in Chicago that makes it.
Yeah.
But how come we can't find it in Walmart or any of these Piggly Wiggly or whatever stores here in Prairie du Chien?
Because not enough people, Joyce, my guess is not enough people are like yourself and want that particular
high-quality chocolate. They do make very good chocolate. I mean, the chocolate that's really the high-quality chocolate that they sell is called Dove. And those are that's pretty expensive stuff.
Yeah.
That uses the good
Dove
stuff.
Bars, yeah.
That uses the high-quality cocoa butter, the cocoa fats, rather. They don't substitute soybean oil, that sort of thing. So, the cheap chocolate is they use another fat. That's what happens.
So, not all. So that's where you get your differences in chocolate. Then it's the level of other ingredients other than chocolate.
Well, the finest quality. The thing about the high quality chocolate is just chocolate with sugar, right? I mean, that's what's great about it. The marvelous thing. What made Mr. Mars, $6 billion man, is the fact that chocolate fat is structured in such a way that it has a very precise melting point, and that melting point is like is almost at the exact same temperature as the human body. So consequently, it melts in your mouth and not in your hand. So as soon as you put a chocolate bar, a high-quality chocolate bar that has chocolate, a high level of chocolate fat into your mouth, what it does is it goes through a phase change, right? This is physics 101. So what it's doing, it absorbs the moisture, absorbs the heat from your mouth. So you put high-quality chocolate in your mouth, you get that cooling, you know, that gush of coolingness in your mouth. And that's what made him the $6 billion man.
He figured out how to do that.
Well, he took advantage of the fact that if you produced, you know, the little M&M bars, if you made the little M&Ms, that they would melt in your, you know, in your mouth and not in your hand. That's what it was all about. Now, cheap chocolate is what they do is they substitute other fats for chocolate. They call it cocoa butter.
Yeah.
The high-quality stuff is called cocoa butter. If you want the cheap brands, use, you know, palm oil or, you know, okay, or something, or margarine or something. Who knows what they use? Something disgusting.
Jim Nguyen, who's our guest, we're talking with Jim today about what some people call the food of the gods, chocolate, and getting a little of the history and the botany of it today and answering your questions as well. Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with Jim Nguyenhuis, UW-Madison Professor of Horticulture, and you know, an expert on chocolate, too. He's done some work with M&M Mars in Brazil. And so we're talking with him about the food of the gods, as it's sometimes called, and certainly inviting your questions and comments. We had a questioner earlier who asked about the old Mars bars, where do you get them? And they were discontinued in 2002 under that name and no longer called that. According to an email from Randall, it's now called Snickers Almond. That's the same bar. And someone else emailed in to say Walgreens keeps that bar right by the cash register. So there you have it. For our earlier caller, you can still get it, except now it's called Snickers Almond. Lewis in La Crosse, on to you. Thank you for calling.
You're welcome. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
I've got a question about a dark chocolate, now that we're all supposed to not only being good for our health, but also things that are good to eat, although I'll take milk chocolate any day.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't know exactly how to pronounce it, but it's XOCAI. And I checked it out on the internet a little bit, but most of the sites seem to be marketing sites. And I don't know if that's a name brand or if that's a type of chocolate, but it's
Zosia,
like
maybe?
Pardon me?
Might be pronounced Zosia?
I think it is, yeah.
Well, you know, with a name like that, don't you have a sense that they can charge just twice as much?
Yeah.
And if they have an attractive packaging as well, I bet it's just a brand name.
Okay.
Again, high-quality chocolate is all about, you know, using the chocolate solids and the fats. And if you use cocoa butter, the higher the amount of cocoa butter, the more you're going to get that refreshing, you're going to get that refreshing mouthfeel and you're going to get that refreshing flavor. That's what it's all about. If so, the cheap stuff just uses other sorts of, you know, saturated fats.
Right. That was another question, what to look for on the back label. And I also heard something about the difference between pure vanilla and vanillin, something like that.
Vanilla extract?
No, they almost were spelled the same way, but one was vanilla and the other one was like vanilla, and it ended like an I-N instead of I-A, and one was a cheaper version of the other.
Well, you can be sure that there's somebody out there trying to duplicate chocolate in their little food science lab.
Yeah.
But thank God it's still produced in abundant quantities, and we still have, you know, natural chocolate available to us. And I agree that we do, you know, we all enjoy eating chocolate. I've never met anyone who doesn't. And in fact, I should let Larry know that I don't feel that I'm divorced from my vegetable self, because we did, you know, our class is so democratic. Irwin Gold and I teach, of course, vegetable crops. We voted, and we voted chocolate as a vegetable because you got to have five a day. So, you know, we figured chocolate, because we voted out eggplant, as all the listeners know. We voted out eggplant, and we voted out the bell pepper. So we had to have a few extras, and we decided we'd vote in chocolate.
There you have it. Well, you know, and Lewis mentioned dark chocolate, and I know Dr. James Stein, who is director of preventive cardiology at the UW Hospitals and Clinics, says that in terms of antioxidants, only dark chocolate has a benefit, and it must be a small amount each day.
Oh, well, I think, I think the milk chocolates would as well. What you don't want to have is the abomination, which is, what's that stuff called? It's called white chocolate.
Yeah, white chocolate.
That's awful. That is the chocolate equivalent to the eggplant. That is the chocolate equivalent to the bell pepper. You know what they do? They take all they do is take the chocolate butter, right? And they add some other cheap, you know, highly, you know, awful chalk and some off other fat. And then they add milk solids and sugar. So, in fact, the whole chocolate solids, everything that has all those terrific antioxidants that, you know, make us feel good about eating chocolate, all of that is discarded. So white chocolate is just, that's just an abomination. We don't even want to go there.
All right. Lewis, thank you. Mary and La Crosse, on to you now. Hi.
Hi, thank you. Now I've had some of my chuckles to go along with good heart health along with the dark chocolate. But my question is about if Jim would please talk about fair trade chocolate and what it means to us and what brands we can find to use the fair trade chocolate. And I'll hang up and listen.
Thank you. All right. Thank you.
Golly, one of the things I was impressed about when I was working with Mars in Brazil was that much of the chocolate is actually produced by small farmers. You know, this is in stark contrast to Africa and Indonesia, where it's produced, you know, on huge, huge plantations. In Brazil, it's actually many, many thousands of small farmers that produce it because the land is very hilly. You know, it's sort of like Western Wisconsin. You know, it's really hilly. They can't just bulldoze it down and plant in the chocolate plants. The other thing that's pretty inspirational about it is the fact that the chocolate trees are fairly short little trees. Yeah. In fact, you can reach up and harvest them by hand. And in fact, the farmers keep the older overstory of the tropical rainforest. So the chocolate trees are actually grown in the understory of the tropical rainforest. So in fact, the migratory birds still have some place to go to. I'm not saying it doesn't affect the ecology, but it's not like a cornfield in Iowa. You know,
Mars, and that's where Mars gets its chocolate.
They do. In fact, it's sort of sad in a way that much of the in that area, which is the area where it was, in fact, native to, that is probably one of the hardest areas in the world to grow chocolate. Central America used to produce a great deal of chocolate. There is almost zero chocolate produced, and it's because of diseases. The other country that you're very familiar with, Trinidad Tobago, that also used to be a chocolate-producing area, that's no longer. Chocolate is no longer produced there because of diseases. Where it's produced is in West Africa, East Africa, and Indonesia, Malaysia, and it's produced in tremendous amounts there. And the reason that it's so much more productive is there is because they were able to import the plant, but they weren't able, they left the diseases, many of the diseases behind. So it's produced more as a plantation crop. Fair trade is a process by which, you know, these small growers are able to work in, you know, cooperatives and are paid a higher amount. There's like a chocolate exchange in Brazil, you know, and I think that they do determine the price. So fair trade is probably giving them an opportunity. It's probably providing them with an alternative that they did not have before, because previously you simply went in and whatever the big boys are going to offer you as the price for chocolate that year, that's what you got paid. But now fair trade provides them with an alternative.
Let's turn to Sandy in Crescent, I believe, Minnesota. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
My question today is about chocolate, as far as the storage of chocolate and the shelf life. How long can you have
the one odd thing about chocolate is that chocolate butter it tends to produce kind of a bloom on it. It doesn't, to my knowledge, it doesn't affect the flavor. But, you know, when you store a chocolate bar for a long time, you sort of get this, you know, you get this sort of
whitish,
light, you know, sort of a whitish bloom on it. And that's because the chocolate is you know, it's all a function of that chocolate fat, that cocoa butter. Okay. I don't think it affects the flavor at all. I still eat it. Doesn't bother me at all.
All right.
But it does. But it does not have as lovely an appearance. That's true.
So would you say it's somewhat indefinite?
I think in terms of the culinary experience, I think it's pretty much indefinite. But I do know that under storage, that chocolate butter will tend to migrate out, and it does create it. It's a little unsightly, but it doesn't affect the flavor, to my knowledge.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
All right, thank you for calling. And Wayne and DePere, we turn to you now. Hi, Wayne.
Hi. My wife and I own an edible arrangement store here in DePere, and we put out just a ton of chocolate on fruit. Probably 80% of the stuff that we put out has got chocolate on it. People love chocolate.
Well, you're sure right about that. As a matter of fact, my wife and I have a group of friends that we had over for the Super Bowl yesterday, sort of a little Super Bowl party, and one of the things that my wife made was chocolate-covered strawberries, and they're always a big hit.
The number one thing that we put chocolate on is strawberries.
Do you use the chocolate that has high cocoa butter, or do you use some other saturated fat as well? It may be that they, you know, probably palm oil or something, right, is sort of more indestructible than would be the cocoa butter itself.
It's a semi-sweet.
Okay. It could very well be that's a mixture of other fats, and that what they wanted to be able to do is have that so it will never melt, right? So I'm sure if you're putting it onto a fruit or if you're putting it out in an area where the temperature might be higher than 98 degrees, you would not be able to use cocoa butter. You'd have to use something that has a higher melting point.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I have to agree with you, Wayne. It's great with fruit. I wish she'd tried some on pineapple. We had some fresh pineapple that she cut up, and I thought, you know, pineapple and chocolate would have been all right, too. But she...
It's great.
Ah, you've tried it.
We do put chocolate on pineapple and apples and oranges, pears, almost any of that stuff. You can put chocolate on it. It tastes great.
Well, you're right about I know you're right about the strawberries, and I can only imagine you're right about the others. Thanks. Thanks a lot for calling, Wade. Appreciate it. All right. Edible arrangements there. Let's go to Carlos in Waukesha. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Sure.
What's on your mind?
I want to make a comment about, I read from the Mayans because I'm from Chiapas.
Oh, cool.
And my city is nearby to the border of Guatemala. So my grandpa used to do chocolate because he carved the cacao, which is the fruit. And the Mayans used to use the seeds inside, or means like the cacao is exchange money.
Oh, they use it for money.
Oh, that's right.
Used to be as a money, just exchange. You know, it was have more value than gold, I guess.
Well, you know, you're talking to the guy who's like the number one fan of you and your culture, right? Because there's no place I admire more than Mexico. You know, imagine what they did, right?
Yes.
Think of what Mexican did. They took chocolate, right? Domesticated it. And then what do? They mix it with chili peppers, and they call it mole. I mean, how can I not admire that? That is such a great combination.
Right. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And you're right, Gail Ambrosius, Madison chocolatier, says also that good chocolate is kind of its own food group. One of her specialties is a chocolate truffle with a hot and fiery cinnamon cayenne filling.
Oh, God. Well, see, she's, you know what she's doing? She's sort of doing just what this previous caller did, right? You're really, it's all about the Mayan culture. And that's, the mole is a wonderful, you know, just a wonderful combination. And gosh, you know, chocolate with capsaicin? Wow.
Thanks again, Carlos, for calling. Judy in Wanakee, we're on to you now. Hi, Judy.
Hi. I'm calling about caffeine in chocolate because for various health reasons, we're often advised to avoid caffeine. I was just wondering how much dark chocolate equals a cup of coffee, or if there are any non-caffeine chocolate products available.
Well, now, really, you're going to have to bite the bullet here. And just, you can't worry about these alkaloids, right? You're going to have to savor the wonder of the great alkaloids and not even worry about the amount of caffeine in chocolate. I think you're just going to have to, you're going to have to enjoy.
Now, we can't in other be, words, we, you're not sure how much caffeine
if there's, is. If there is caffeine in there, and I don't, but I can't worry about it. It's just such a great thing. I mean, you got to have some things you've just got to bite the bullet and go for.
I'm not, and I have no idea how much caffeine as a percentage of the product.
I do not know exactly. I know that there are, you know, I know there's caffeine along with a lot of other alkaloids, but I don't know how much.
That's one we can't help you with right off the top here, Judy. Thanks a lot.
Decaffeinated chocolate, though. I know. Yeah. That's going to be the function. Well, you know what's decaffeinated chocolate? White chocolate. But I'm not going to allow you to eat that.
There you have it. Deborah and Madison, on to you. Hi, Deb.
Hi. I just wanted to say, to give a little boost to the idea of chocolate being a necessary vegetable, is it's actually two. And I'd like him to speak to the incredible pulp that surrounds the cocoa beans when you crack the pod. It's like this gossamer, somewhere between the best lemon curd and soursop you've ever had in your life. I don't understand why they don't process that and save it, too. It almost makes you forget about the chocolate.
It does indeed. You know, I'll tell you the quick story about that. I was, when I went to work with M&M Mars in Brazil, they picked me up at the hotel and on the second day, and they took me out to the field. But they didn't tell me that I was going to go out to the field. You know, I thought it was another meeting. So I'm dressed with a tie, you know, and a nice shirt. And all of a sudden, you know, we drive way out into the hills and we're tromping through, you know, these swamps and there's mosquitoes and whatever. And I didn't bring any water with me. And, you know, we're walking and walking and walking, and I'm getting so, and I finally said, oh, my gosh. I said, does somebody have anything to drink? You know, I'm dying of thirst. And so the man I was with, he reaches up, he just rips a cocoa pod off a tree, opens up his machete, flah, you know, he cracks open that pod. And inside, and I had never seen this, actually, mm-hmm. you know, he cracks open the pod, and the seeds are surrounded by this just incredibly rich mucilaginous pulp, right? Mm-hmm. And he just rips some seeds with his hands, you know, and just stuffs them in his mouth and just starts sucking on this pulp, you know, and hands it to me. And, of course, I'm thinking, oh, my God, you know, I'm going to die. He can eat this, but it'll kill me. But I was so thirsty, I did. I reached in and I grabbed this pulp and I just pushed it into my mouth, and it was incredibly refreshing and delicious. And, you know, the funny thing is we just had our students in Central America, and I took them to sue some genetic resources in chocolate and coffee. And of course, I did the same thing with them. When I was with my students in Central America, we ripped a coffee pod down and I broke it open with a machete, and they all were sucking on the seeds, and several of them stopped by my office and they told me the same thing, how much they enjoyed, you know, cracking open that cocoa pod and eating that mucilaginous pulp. I agree. It's terrific, but it's so high in sugar and it ferments at such a high rate that there's no way that it could actually be, I don't think, preserved in any way. As soon as you crack open that pod, that's it. It's going to ferment, and it's going to ferment quickly.
I wanted to mention here before we get away, Olbrich Botanical Gardens in Madison has an exhibit called Chocolate, the Bitter and the Sweet. It's through March 21st at the Boltz Conservatory. There, Olbrich is a great place to go anyway. And they have two cacao trees or cocoa trees.
They do
trees.
Indeed, yeah. I was, in fact, they just had me over a week ago on Saturday, and I gave a Saturday evening presentation on chocolate with some of my better stories.
and the exhibit itself, you had a chance to look at the exhibit. It's a great exhibit.
Well, it's terrific to be able to walk into the Olbrich. It's terrific in Madison, Wisconsin, to be able to walk over to the Olbrich, walk around and see a chocolate tree right over the Theobroma cacao. I mean, it was one of Linnaeus's better days when he named that. I mean, everything else, right? You think of beans, right? Phaseolus vulgaris. Like, what is that? Little boat or something. Who knew? But no, Linnaeus had a good day when he thought about Theobroma cacao.
Steve in Wausau, we're on to you. Hi, Steve.
Hi. A few years ago, I was trying to convince my mother that I should eat a lot more dark chocolate to keep the cancer away, and I found these little things at Walgreens and started eating them, and then she started eating them, but then I went online, and there's some Kuna Indians off the coast of Panama, and they harvest them there and drink 4 or 5 cups of coffee a day or whatever they make with it, and they don't have any heart disease at all. This has been studied. And they've gone for years. But then when they go to the mainland in Panama and get a job at McDonald's, they all come down with heart problems and things like that because of the fat in the food.
Well, that's a testimonial for chocolate. This is exactly why we voted it as a vegetable. Because you've got to have 5 vegetables a day. And if one of them is chocolate, that's fine with me.
I would thank Steve. I want to give Joanna in Madison a chance because she's got something about caffeine in chocolate. Hi.
Hi, guys. I'm sure enjoying the show. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm calling in response to the woman who was concerned about the caffeine levels in chocolate. I have a dear sister who's a registered dietitian who is a coffee fanatic, and I'm not much for coffee because the caffeine bothers me, but I sure love dark chocolate. And God bless my sister. She's been allergic to chocolate since she was a child. But when the issue of caffeine and health came up, and I think it's unsettled, I don't think it's as clear as the woman who called earlier suggested that, you know, all caffeine is bad for us or across the board. But God bless my sister. She called me years ago when this issue was first coming up to announce very modestly, because she knows I love chocolate and she can't even eat it, that the caffeine in chocolate is good caffeine. So it's distinguished, I think, on a molecular basis from the caffeine that may be connected to health issues. So I agree with your guest, Larry, that chocolate should be enjoyed with abandon and no worries about caffeine, regardless of caffeine is a different caffeine than that which would maybe cause health problems for any of us.
Perfect.
And even if it wasn't, I couldn't care.
Oh, that's a great. Thank you, Joanne.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, here we are. We've about run out of time. And all of our lines are filled yet. I'm sorry we can't get to more people, but it's great to be able to talk about chocolate.
Okay.
I loved it. Thank you.
Well,
Jim,
we have Irwin and I back, and we got to talk about vegetables. Planting season's coming up, Larry. We got to talk veggies.
We'll talk veggies.
Okay.
I promise you we will do that. Jim Nienhuis, UW-Madison Professor of Horticulture, gardening haiku poet, and expert on chocolate, too. He's done a lot of work with Mars Company in Brazil, as you heard, and it was fun talking with him about chocolate as we approach Valentine's Day, when a lot of chocolate is going to be consumed. I'm pretty sure of that. Chocolate. And the Olbrich Botanical Garden in Madison, don't forget, Chocolate, the Bitter and the Sweet exhibit through March 21st at the Boltz Conservatory. You get a chance to see a couple of those cacao trees there. Coming up tomorrow, we'll take a look at vehicles, hybrid vehicles, and we'll also talk about collecting autographs.